Hello, it is the 7th of January and welcome to our Friday edition of Career 24. I'm your host, Kwon Jang-won. The government is looking to overhaul the nation's antivirus measures in preparation for the potential spread of the Omicron COVID-19 variant. We'll have more in our news briefing shortly. Meanwhile, the government announced on Thursday a range of measures to ease the public's financial burden ahead of the Lunar New Year holiday. We'll be taking a closer look at those measures for Weekly Economy Review. And then coming up later on Movie Spotlight, we'll be reviewing two local releases, a holiday rom-com and a gritty police thriller. Let's begin Career 24. South Korea is looking to revamp its COVID-19 antivirus measures to enhance efficacy, taking into account the possibility of the Omicron variant becoming a dominant strain. The government also asked that its courts make a swift ruling on its COVID-19 pass system to help minimize confusion. To outline the latest developments on this and our other headlines of the day, our KBS World Radio news editor, Koo Hee-jin, joins us over the phone. Hee-jin, hello.
Hello, Jang.
So the government is seeking to raise efficiency and minimize confusion with its overhaul. And this comes on the day that its daily infection figure fell below the 4,000 mark, the first Friday tally to do so in more than a month. So what do we know at this point on the potential new measures, Hee-jin?
Well, Prime Minister Kim Buk-yeom on Friday called for a system overhaul during an interagency COVID-19 meeting to keep pace with Omicron's rapid expansion. The number of people infected with the variant has reached over 2,300 over the past month and a half. Senior Health Ministry official Lee Gil said customs authorities will beef up immigration control for overseas travelers, while epidemiological studies will focus on groups at higher risk of transmission. Meanwhile, the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency reported 3,717 daily new infections on Friday, the first time the daily tally has dipped below 4,000 on a Friday since November 26. The number of patients in serious or critical condition also remained below 1,000, dropping by 43 from the previous day to 839.
And as we flagged up earlier, the Prime Minister also called for a swift court ruling regarding a case on the enforcement of the COVID-19 pass system to help minimise public confusion and conflict that a suspension may cause. Can you tell us more?
That's right. Prime Minister Kim said the government is open to improving related policies, stressing that the system aims to help with a safe normalization of daily life and that he views the controversy as an adjustment process to find a balance between social distancing measures and human rights. Around 1,700 citizens, including high school students, filed an injunction against the central government and 17 mayors and governors nationwide, as well as the COVID-19 pass system, asking the Constitutional Court to suspend the validity of the program. The petitioners claim that forcing people to receive vaccinations infringes on their basic rights in violation of the Constitution. Meanwhile, a woman confirmed with COVID-19 shortly before giving birth has died from the virus. It is the first time health authorities have reported such a case. The government said on Friday that the female patient, who had an underlying medical condition and was not vaccinated, tested positive in her 32nd week of pregnancy. She delivered a baby on December 28th, but sadly passed away on January 4th. The newborn tested negative.
Let's continue on now to the latest news in the political scene. The presidential candidate for the main opposition People Power Party, Yoon Suk-yeol, and the party's chief, Lee Jun-suk, managed to reconcile on Thursday and put an end to a month-long dispute over election strategies. They were seen embracing each other, and it was an unexpected end to another dramatic day in the PPP camp, wasn't it, Hee-jin?
Indeed. The surprise reconciliation came on the same day that PPP had initially mulled on an ouster of its chair, Ijun Sok, 16 days after he resigned from the party's presidential campaign committee amid a heated feud with the candidate. Lee finally showed up late on Thursday to a general meeting of its party lawmakers and told his colleagues that he truly hopes for Yoon's victory and that his criticism of Yoon's campaign was meant as a wake-up call to heed younger voters. Yoon reciprocated by making a surprise appearance at the meeting at around 8 p.m. as Lee was speaking. The two agreed to join forces to win the election and embraced. Yoon resumed his campaign trail on Friday, announcing a pledge to inject around 17 trillion won, or about $14 billion, to expand the intercity transportation network in the capital region to reduce commuting time to Seoul from anywhere in the capital region to less than 30 minutes.
Meanwhile, in the ruling party camp, Democratic Party presidential candidate Lee Jae-myung has criticised his own party, arguing that it's ignored public opinion and the market. So what did he say exactly?
Well, at a forum co-hosted by the Korean Association for Public Administration on Thursday, Lee Jae-myung said the public censure that the DP now faces is due to its stubbornness and tendency to give priority to its philosophies and values over those of the public. He attributed the ruling bloc's inefficient real estate policies to the party and the government's denial of market signals of a housing supply shortage. The candidate then said he will allow the market and ease unnecessary regulations. The former Gyeonggi governor also promised intensive reforms of government agencies and officials.
And the minor opposition People's Party presidential candidate An Cheol-soo said that the decision to form a coalition with the main opposition candidate Yoon Sang-yeol is up to the public. Can you tell us more?
Yes, An, who is seeing a significant rise in approval ratings in recent polls, made the remarks on Thursday in an interview with KBS. The candidate refused to give a direct answer about the possibility of unifying his candidacy with Yoon. However, he stressed that the public should be given the right to decide who is the right candidate in terms of ethics, family issues, competence and personal vision. An added that he joined the presidential race to win and that he can make the use of his abilities to help the nation ride out the crisis.
And finally, the United Nations Security Council is expected to hold a closed-door meeting on Monday in New York to discuss the recent launch of what North Korea claims to us a hypersonic missile. What more can you tell us?
Yes, a foreign ministry official in Seoul who declined to be identified said on Friday that Seoul is aware that some UNSC members requested the meeting on Monday, Eastern Standard Time in the U.S., as we foreshadowed on Thursday. The official said the South Korean government is closely communicating with the U.S. and other major council members. The AFP earlier reported that the U.S., France, Britain, Ireland and Albania requested the meeting. Ballistic missile launches by the North are in violation of UNSC resolutions. The Security Council has held a meeting almost every time the North has launched a ballistic missile. Meetings were convened soon after North Korea fired ballistic missiles in late September and October last year, but the UNSC failed to adopt a resolution condemning the launches due to opposition by China and Russia.
That wraps up our news briefing today. Hee Jin, thank you for those updates.
Thank you.
It's time now for our Friday In-Depth Corner weekly economy review. This week, we'll be taking a closer look at a set of measures that South Korea has announced to lessen the financial burden on the public ahead of the Lunar New Year holiday. We'll also delve into the country's consumer prices last year and the economic growth outlook for this year. And to help us look beyond the numbers is our expert guest, economics professor Yang Jun-suk from the Catholic University of Korea, who has now joined us in the studio. Professor Yang, hello. It's great to see you again.
Happy to be here.
Yes, so we start, as usual, with the stock markets. Professor, how did the KOSPI and KOSDAQ perform in this first week of the year?
Okay, well, it wasn't, for both of the indices, it wasn't a very good week. For KOSPI, it was down on Wednesday and Thursday. That's following the large fall that U.S. markets saw after the Fed minutes were announced. It ended today at 2,955.35. It did go up today, plus 1.19%, but for the week as a whole, it fell by 0.76%. KOSDAQ was down Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and in fact, it was down more than 2% on Wednesday and Thursday. It did slightly better today. It ended today at 995.16. It was up 1.52%, but for the entire week, it was down 3.75%. And for the Korean won, there was a steady and relatively rapid depreciation of the won for the week. It broke 1,200 won per dollar. That's after the expectation of a more rapid monetary tightening by the Fed, U.S. Fed. And it ended today at 1,202.50. For the week, it depreciated by 1.15%.
Okay, so a bit of a downward trend this week. Professor, how do you think the stock market will fare this year? Last year, we saw some record highs, but what do you think this year holds?
Well, last year we did see some record highs, but in terms of actual amount of increase, it wasn't very much. KOSPI for the year only rose by about 3.6%, so most of the rise actually took place in 2020. Even though it only rose by about 3.6%, it did do relatively well compared to other Asian countries. It outperformed Morgan Stanley Capital Capital International Asian Index, which fell by 7.4%. So I think the best that you can say for the KOSPI index last year was that it didn't fall. And this year, I'm not sure if I would go that far because the U.S. Fed as well as Korean Bank of Korea is going to start tightening the monetary policy, raising the interest rate. And the KOSPI was up about 31% compared to the highs pre-pandemic. I've said this in this program before, but that seems too much compared to the fundamentals of the companies in KOSPI. So my feeling is that it's going to fall this year. How much will it fall? That depends on how well Korea does compared to other countries in dealing with inflation and the pandemic. KOSDAQ, similar story. For the year, it rose by 6.8%, but compared to the highs pre-pandemic, it's up 49%. So again, most of the rise in the market took place in 2020, and I also expect the market not to do very well this year.
Okay, so not a very optimistic outlook, unfortunately, but that is something to note for this year. Okay, moving on Thursday, the government announced a set of measures to stabilize the livelihoods of ordinary people in the run-up to the Lunar New Year holiday. That's coming up January 31st to February 2nd. The government will act to increase the supply of holiday-related foodstuffs. Price hikes in public utility charges, including railway and expressway fees, will be curbed. Jobs for some 600,000 senior citizens and the disabled will be created. And for small business owners and for the self-employed, an additional 40 trillion won in relief aid will be provided. So quite a menu of measures there, Professor. What is your take on these measures?
Okay, well, except possibly for the relief for small business owners, I think the rest of it is going to be pretty much a band-aid with good intentions. For the measures to fight and limit inflation, notably freezing public utility fees, railway and highway fees, as well as increasing the supply of agricultural goods, those will all have some effect. For the public utility fees and railway fees, that makes up just a little bit of the total consumer bundle, consumption bundle, that I don't think it will do very much to actually limit inflation. Also, the government is increasing the supply of agricultural goods before the Lunar New Year. The prices of agricultural goods always rise before the Lunar New Year. So this will limit the increase a bit, but I don't think it will stop it. It actually depends more on the weather than anything else. And because the weather this year has not been very cooperative, or last year has not been very cooperative, I don't expect to have that much of a change. And for the public utility prices, yes, they'll be frozen for the first quarter, but KEPCO has already announced that it will raise the electricity fees prices in the second and fourth quarter. So again, I don't think it'll do that much for inflation.
Right, so it'll help a little bit, but overall looking at it, not a huge amount.
It'll make people pass the Lunar New Year a bit easier, but they'll still get stuck with the bill just a few weeks later.
Okay, what about for the small business owners and then they're self-employed?
Okay, well, because it's a relatively large amount, 40 trillion won, I think it will be a bit more effective, but still, compared to the losses that these businesses have taken in the last few years, it's not going to be nearly enough. But at least I think the good news is that we are starting to recognize that we need to have higher compensation for these small businesses. Because in the previous budgets, we only had an amount of maybe about 10 trillion won or even less allocated to compensation. So at least we're recognizing that these companies are in trouble and we need to compensate them more.
I see. You mentioned earlier about the concerns over inflation. Well, according to Statistics Korea, South Korea's consumer prices grew at the fastest pace in 10 years in 2021. Consumer prices rose 2.5% last year from the previous year, marking the steepest on-year rise since 2011. In December, consumer prices rose 3.7% from a year earlier as well. So, Professor, what do you read into these figures?
Okay, well, because things are moving so quickly, I'm going to be using December to December numbers rather than the yearly average. And that's the 3.7% inflation that you just mentioned. And it's down slightly from November. November was 3.8%. So that's just a little bit of good news. But it's still among the highest in the last 10 years. Last time we saw inflation above the 3%, that was 10 years ago. Now, the largest reason for inflation in December was agricultural, livestock and fishery goods, which were up 7.8%. And as we just mentioned, that's usual, what we see before the Lunar New Year. And also the rise in energy prices. Gasoline rose by 21%. Diesel fuel rose by 27%. But we've been seeing this for the last 2 or 3 months. Now, the worrying thing is, so let's take away the agricultural goods and energy. Let's look at the core inflation. Core inflation, excluding agricultural goods and oil, is 2.7%. Core inflation, excluding food and energy, is 2.2%, which is also fairly high, though it's closer to Bank of Korea's goal of 2.0%. But looking just at month of December, it rose by 0.4%, which is very high. And remember, we took away agriculture and energy from calculating this core inflation rate. So it means that the inflation is becoming wider. It's becoming more spread toward the entire economy, not just energy and agriculture. So it is starting to become somewhat worrisome. And I think it does justify Bank of Korea trying to raise the rates at least once more early in the year.
Well, then, what do you make of the Bank of Korea's comments this week, where they said they expect inflation to hover below 2% by the end of this year? Do you also expect the country's inflation to ease at some point?
I think so, but there's really two schools of how economists are looking at this inflation. The first school is that the inflation is due to the real economy. There are supply bottlenecks and transportation bottlenecks because of the pandemic, and it's coupled with high expenditure tilted toward goods, mostly from the United States. That is causing the problems in the real economy, which is causing inflation. Then the second school, which is not uh, exclusionary. People can believe in both.
Mm.
But the second school is the monetary school. There's too much money printed because we are trying to get out of the coronavirus. And that's almost all the advanced countries that have printed too much money.
Mm.
So that is the cause of inflation. If you believe in the first school, then the pandemic, once it ends, inflation will end with it, with a caveat that I will mention a bit later. The second school, unless you get rid of the excess money, high supply of money, inflation is going to continue. So most of the advanced countries are now looking toward raising the interest rate and tighter monetary policy. But the caveat is that if the inflation, current inflation, lasts longer, then inflationary expectations by people will rise, and that will make inflation longer and higher. So, yes, the inflation can be transitory, but only if it can be brought down fairly soon. If it continues at a high level and if it raises people's expectations, then we might be stuck with high inflation for a while.
Okay, so a couple of ifs there that we need to look out for over the next year or so. Meanwhile, South Korea's finance ministry said they expect the South Korean economy to grow 3.1% in 2022, which is a bit more upbeat than the 3% growth estimates by the Bank of Korea and the OECD. As a final thought, what is your growth outlook for South Korea this year?
Okay, well, potential growth rate for Korea is thought to be around 2.0 to 2.5%. And unlike last year, there is going to be very little bounce back effect. So it's going to be closer to 2.5%. Now, 3.1%, I think, is possible. But you need to get very lucky. What I mean by very lucky, first, you need to have increased consumption. The government is assuming consumption of 3.8% increase for the year. That means there's going to be at least some end of distancing and hopefully some so-called revenge spending as well. You need higher consumption to make that goal. And secondly, you need high exports. And I think it's possible, but it's going to be very difficult.
Hmm.
Government is assuming 2.0% growth, but we had historically high exports this year. So if you want to have historically high growth of exports next year as well, high amount of exports as well, we not only need an increase in volume of exports, but we also need prices to remain high, which is both good news and bad news for Korea because that raises our export value, but it also increases our import value, which mathematically brings down the GDP. I think we need to be very lucky to have a 3.1%, but it is within the realm of possibility.
Okay, so we will see if indeed the country does get lucky this year. We'll wrap it up there for our weekly economy review segment. Professor, thank you once again for your thoughts, and we'll see you again next time.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock and Forex Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index rose 34.36 points, or 1.18% on Friday, closing the week at 2,954.89. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also rose, gaining 14.86 points, or 1.52%, to close at 995.16. On the foreign exchange, the local currency weakened 0.51 against the dollar, ending the day at 1,201.51. You can check Korean stock and forex closings at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next up, it's Korea Trending, our daily segment where we take a look at some of the other news stories that have been trending online in Korea today. And for that, it's Walter Lee joining us in the studio today to bring us those stories. Walter, hello. It's good to see you.
Hello, Jung-ha. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. So what do you have for us today?
Okay, so for our first story, we have an update on the Osteum implant embezzlement case that we discussed earlier on this week. We'll then explain why the next time you step into a Starbucks in Korea, you may need to bring a little more money. And for our last story, we'll find out how a major online volleyball portal picked Kim Yong-kyung as the number one female volleyball athlete of all time.
Okay, let's get started with our first story then, and it's an update of a story we covered previously on Korea Trending. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, so it's actually an extension of the story, as we mentioned. It's an update of the Osstem implant employee who embezzled over 188 billion won in company funds. The last time we talked about the embezzler, surnamed E, he was at large. However, he was caught on Wednesday and police requested an arrest warrant for him on Friday.
Right, I understand that he didn't get very far, that he was incredibly caught in the building where he lived, just in another empty apartment. Okay, so what else do we know at this point?
Well, during a police investigation, he said his act had been an order from his superiors and that fellow subordinates were in on it as well. But apparently his statement and that of the company don't line up. The country's biggest dental plant maker said he instructed two subordinates to help with forging documents during the embezzlement process. According to the company, no orders were made from the higher-ups. The police have summoned the two said subordinate employees who allegedly assisted in the forgery and are trying to find out if there were more possible accomplices. The company recently removed these subordinate employees from their duties.
Right, so initially it was understood that E had embezzled the funds to play the stock markets and skim the profits, essentially. But now he's saying he was ordered by superiors in the company to do that. Of course, the company is denying all involvement. And as we mentioned, the embezzled fund was a whopping 188 billion won, which is about 156 million US dollars. Have the police been able to recover all of that, or at least freeze some of his accounts?
Well, luckily, yes. So the police have frozen his stocks account. But if he had lost huge amounts of money through trading, it would have been very tricky. And it's a very tricky process to try and recover anything. Meanwhile, police were able to recover gold bars, about half the amount that he transferred the embezzled funds into. However, the whereabouts of the remaining half remains a mystery.
Right, so it still seems like there are some questions that need answering, and meanwhile, it's still not yet clear whether the company will be allowed to resume trading of their shares after they suspended it, or whether the company will be delisted entirely as well. That's a possibility.
Right.
But at least the main culprit, it seems, has been caught now. Okay, let's move on to our next story for today. What do you have for us?
Yes, so our next story might come as a disappointment for coffee aficionados here in South Korea, as Starbucks coffee prices will be raised. The coffee chain announced that it will raise the price of 46 out of the 53 beverages currently on sale by amounts of 100 won to 400 won each. It's been 8 years since their last raise, and now Americanos, a staple drink to many, will cost 4,500 won instead of the 4,100 won. The new rates are to be applied starting next Thursday.
Wow, so that's almost a 10% hike for an Americano now. So what's the reason behind their decision to raise their prices?
Well, the coffee giant explained that it was because the price of coffee beans soared recently, and price pressures for various costs like international logistics costs have continued to rise due to COVID-19. In fact, according to media reports, due to a shipping crunch, a spike in demand, unusually dry weather, and of course the COVID-19 lockdowns, the international coffee bean price has soared on year by 200% to $2.33 per pound, lodging the highest price in 9 years.
Now, what will be of concern for the general customer, and not only for customers of Starbucks, is that the company has become somewhat of a flagship coffee brand in Korea, and their decision to raise prices could have a domino effect onto other brands to raise their prices as well. Is that expected to happen?
Yeah, that's possible. So Dongsa Foods will also raise the factory price of coffee products by an average of 7.3% starting next Friday. However, domestic coffee brand Angelina's firmly stated that they aren't planning on such an increase, and SPC Group, which owns several domestic coffee brands, announced that nothing definite has been decided as of now.
I see, but it looks like pressure is going to build. Okay, let's move on to our final story for today. What do you have for us?
Yes, so volleyball phenom Kim Yong-kyung has ranked first in the world among female volleyball players, according to volleyball news feed and media hub Volleybox. The website recently updated the rankings of over 40,000 current and former female volleyball athletes from all over the globe. Now, Kim, until recently, was playing for China's Shanghai Bright UBEST women's volleyball club, club, which finished the 2021-2022 season in third place. And with the results of the Chinese Volleyball Super League, Kim managed to snag first place.
I see. So Kim has been ranked number one among 40,000 female volleyball players, both current and former. That is pretty incredible. Can you tell us how the site put the rankings together? I mean, 40,000 is a massive amount of athletes to calculate.
Right. So according to the site, it's a points system based on the rank of the player's team in tournaments, as well as individual awards. So when it comes to earning points for a season, an individual can receive up to 10 points, depending on how far their team makes it. When it comes to individual awards, a player can snag 20 points, which is the highest amount, for each MVP they earn in the Olympics. That includes the prelims as well as MVPs in continental competitions and national leagues. Kim has accumulation over 7,700 points. She started accumulating points all the way back in 2003 when she was a high school athlete, and received the largest amount of points at the 2012 London Olympics.
Right, so it's not just her current form, but it's the incredible form she's maintained throughout her career that has landed her this top spot. Now, Walter, before we go, we know that with the end of the Chinese League, that marks the expiry of Kim's contract with Shanghai. Do we know where she's headed next? Will she be taking a break, perhaps?
That's a good question. So with the 2021 and 2022 season having ended, there's been a lot of attention being paid to what Kim's next steps are going to be. Joining the Korean V-League, or KOVO, isn't a simple process either, as it's currently mid-season and all the team rosters are set. And if Kim does choose to return to KOVO, she'll first have to play for a year at Incheon Hanguk Life, according to internal rules, as she voluntarily withdrew from the team as a player. It should be noted that before heading to Shanghai last year, Kim said that she considered Europe, as well as newly established US League. She also showed great interest in playing in the Italian League at once, and also Turkey as well.
Right, so many eyes will be on where she ends up next. Anyway, that's where we wrap it up for Career Trending. Thank you for bringing us those stories, Walter, and we'll see you next week.
See you next time.
We've come now to our Friday feature, Movie Spotlight, where we review some of the latest releases, both local and international, at the Korean box office and online. And giving us their thoughts on this week's films are our film critics Jason Vesheface and Darcy Paquette, who have both joined us now in the studio. Gentlemen, it's been a while. Hope you've been well. Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Seibu Mani Patiseo.
Yes, it's great to see you both. Okay, to kickstart the year, we are featuring two local films for Movie Spotlight this week, which is the first in quite a while, actually. We'll perhaps get more into the significance of that in a bit. But first, it's a feel-good rom-com called A Year-End Medley. The title in Korean is actually the English phrase Happy New Year. And as the title suggests, it was made for the holiday season. It features a whole host of stars, a la Love Actually. Jason, can you kick us off on this one?
Yeah, it's funny how you mention Love Actually. We'll get onto that. It's got too many celebrities to list here, but the ensemble cast does include Han Ji-min, Kang An-ur, Im Yoon-ah from Sonya Shide, or Girls' Generation, Won Ji-ah, and Lee Dong-wook. It's directed by Kwak Jae-yong, who's synonymous with rom-coms and melodramas, his most famous being, of course, My Sassy Girl, and the classic as well, though he's been far less successful over the last decade or so. As for the synopsis, it follows staff who work at this hotel right next to the River Han in Seoul called Hotel Emros. It's during the New Year period and follows their stories and interactions with the guests. Han Ji-min plays the hotel manager, Lee Dong-wook plays the CEO, and some of the other cast members play other workers, including Im Yoon-ah, who... I mean, she appears like towards the end of the film, and then we have Kang An-ur, who's training to become a public officer but failed the exam and he's pretty miserable, and Lee Kwang-soo works for a popular artist. I think you get the idea. I'll be here all day if I tell you all the, you know, their life stories. It was released online on CJ's platform TVing on the same day as its theatrical release.
Okay, so a large ensemble cast set in a hotel, that might actually make it sound more like a Korean spin on Wes Anderson's The Grand Budapest Hotel, Darcy. But as I mentioned, the trailer makes it look more like Love Actually. Which is it closer to, and does it stand up to either film, which are, of course, very much loved?
Love Actually and No would be my answers to that. It's very much, I think, trying to follow this model of following, you know, many different couples and interweaving stories. These characters, they're all connected in some different ways, but basically they're, more or less independent stories that are happening. And, there are quite a lot of them. I mean, one thing that really hit me about this film as I was watching it is that there's so many different characters to follow and so many different storylines. We're used to that with movies like Love Actually, but I think, there are like 10 storylines or 12 storylines. There's so many in it. You know, it becomes kind of a basic math problem where if you have a film that's, 120 minutes long, you have 12 stories and it's like, you get 10 minutes per relationship, per couple.
Right.
And so there's limited time for that to really develop, I think, in that period of time. But in another sense, the ideal with this situation is that each of the stories kind of complement each other and together they lead to some kind of an emotional structure. It doesn't quite pull it off, I think, right here, but that was the hope.
Okay, Jason has his head in his hands. What did you think? Especially because, as you've mentioned, the director, Kwak Jae-yong, he's very well known for his earlier work, such as My Sassy Girl, which I'm sure many of our listeners will have heard of. Why has he perhaps not struck a chord with some of the newer films and this film as well, it seems?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny how Darcy mentioned how you have all these characters and it's quite difficult to fit it in 120 minutes. Duration. So the thing is with this movie is it's not 120 minutes. It's like 2 hours, 20 minutes or something.
And it feels
like that. It's a film that could, I mean, take a few characters out. I think a 90-minute or 100-minute movie would have been far better. It's a bit sloppy. I didn't like the way the film was edited. There's obviously a lot of CGI because I don't think this hotel exists. Some of the characters I quite liked. Kang Eun-woo was quite fun. There's a quite a funny sequence towards the beginning of the film because he works in this warehouse and everything just falls on top of him. There's just too much going on. It's completely derivative. I mean, even some of the couples in this film, pretty much come out of Love Actually. There's this singer and his manager, right? That's in Love Actually. And then there are kind of almost like stylistic references to the Grand Budapest Hotel as well, which just made me laugh. I didn't hate it. I could have hated it, but I didn't, and I thought I would do. It's okay. In terms of, this film, My Sassy Girl, Kwak Jae-yong, My Sassy Girl was a film, Korean film I watched when I was, in my early 20s, and I just fell in love with it. But I don't think he's quite evolved with the times.
But actually, if you look at My Sassy Girl, there are two versions to that film. There's the director's cut, and then there's the producer's cut that was released in theaters. And the producer's cut is significantly shorter and much better.
It's long, isn't it, My Sassy Girl? It's over 2 hours again, I think, isn't it?
Well, the producer's cut is exactly 2 hours. And then for the DVD release, they let the director go crazy. And, I think some filmmakers, some directors need to be kept under control. But when they get a big hit and they, they acquire a reputation, then they're no longer able to be controlled.
Okay, we mentioned that this is the first Korean film to review in a while. It was released at the end of last year, just before New Year's. But when this film was announced last year, CJ revealed that it was going to be released in both theaters and online. What does that say about the state of the Korean film industry, Jason?
Well, I think the studios are very much pivoting towards streaming at the moment, with box office sales as low as they are. I mean, the local market share in 2021 for Korean films was 30%, with admissions dropping to 18.21 million. To put that into context, back in 2019, it was 111 million. In 2013, the record was 127 million. So I think the industry will bounce back. I don't want to be too pessimistic. I think one of the things I admire about the Korean industry is how resilient it is. And Spider-Man is certainly, I think, generating a bit of, you know, optimism because it sold over 6 million tickets. So you have the right film in there, it will sell tickets and pull in audiences. And I think you could argue that it perhaps wasn't the right decision just to hold on to so many films for so long. That's what some of the studios have done. So these films are kind of in a holding pattern. That being said, though, I think the studios have now accepted that streaming is a necessity for securing revenue and growth. And I think this film is illustrative of that. And it's interesting because just in, 2017, remember what happened with Okja? These studios who own theatres refused to screen it because it had a day-and-date release. So things have changed.
Sure. Okay, so that was Year End Medley. Let's move on to our next film now. And this one is out in theatres. It's a crime drama called The Policeman's Lineage, or Gyeongwan-ae Pi in Korea. It stars Cheol Shik and Cho Jin-woong. A somewhat darker film than Year End Medley, to say the least, Darcy?
Yeah, it's in a different palette. It's based on a Japanese novel called Blood of the Policeman by the author Joe Sasaki that was apparently published in a literary magazine, but it's basically about this shady cop who's played by Cho Jin-woong, and he has shown a willingness to break the law if that means that he can kind of, you know, break through and then arrest these criminals who seem to be above the law. And then we have another character, Min-jae, who's played by Cheol-sik, who characters will remember from Parasite. And, you know, he's been charged with kind of, you know, essentially going undercover and keeping an eye on this cop and trying to unearth evidence of his crimes so that they can, it's kind of like an internal investigation. But, you know, the real drama in the story, I think, comes inside the mind of this character because he, you know, is obviously someone who has firm ideals. We see him at the beginning kind of refusing to cover up a crime that was committed by one of his partners. And
this is the Cheol-sik character.
That's right, the Cheol-sik character. But there's also a personal element because Cheol-sik's deceased father knew this other policeman. And so there's a whole personal backdrop to this drama.
Played by Park Jong-bom.
Yes.
Who's a filmmaker. And I didn't know he was in this film. So I was like, wow, yay.
Okay, interesting.
He's a great director.
So it's another Korean film centering on crime and law enforcement. Examples include Yoo Seung-wan's Unjust, Kim Song-un's A Hard Day. And they all don't tend to portray Korean cops in a very positive light, shall we say. Jason, is this the same?
Yeah, although I think it's a little bit different. You mentioned A Hard Day. That also stars Cho Jin-woon as just a really bad cop. He's pretty nefarious in that film. And yeah, I mean, I've always been intrigued how Korean films portray law enforcement in Korea. It's either corrupt or just incredibly incompetent. here it's kind of, I guess, a little bit of both, but there is a bit of blurring there, I think, and that's what I liked about this film. I had some issues with it, it's a little bit convoluted, and I wasn't expecting to have to focus so much throughout the film. And in terms of the cinematography, I had a lot of issues with it because it's just the camera is constantly moving. It's so kinetic, and that can work sometimes, but when it's just like for 2 hours straight, I came out with
the first 5 minutes I'm like, oh god, this is gonna be really annoying.
Right.
I think partly because the fact it's based on a Japanese novel, and so you have these two, you know, these two characters, and the Cho Jin-woong character, he's kind of likable in a way, and I like that. He's not the cop he is in A Hard Day. He's certainly shady, you know, bit unscrupulous. But that being said, though, that there is something about him that you kind of admire or sympathize with. The kind of the buddy aspect of it as well, you know, the two leading characters here are, you know, become friends, and I think that's quite an interesting relationship.
So Darcy, as you said, it's based on a Japanese novel for its source material, but looking at the trailers, I was very much reminded of the Antoine Fuqua film Training Day, with Denzel Washington, both featuring a sort of younger rookie cop assigned to a more senior but possibly corrupt colleague, and the rookie cop has to learn some hard lessons and make hard decisions. But is that comparison fair, or what do you think of the film?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a lot of these movies, centering on the police, they're kind of two paths you can take, and you can either just show how corrupt society is and make it kind of a general social critique. Or in this case, it's kind of more about just the issue of the law and, you know, how important is it to stick to the letter of the law? You know, is it permissible to kind of step outside the law to do something if you have good intentions?
Do the ends justify the means?
Yeah, and those kind of stories work well when you have kind of a senior figure and then a younger figure with some kind of a clash in personalities or different perspectives. But then through this personal connection and, you know, as they build this partnership, then I think both of them end up kind of seeing things a little more from the other character's point of view. So it fits into that, you know, I don't know, that template.
But does it succeed?
I mean, me too. I didn't dislike it. I didn't really like it either. At the beginning, I didn't think I was going to like the movie at all. And, you know, after 10 or 15 minutes, I found myself kind of warming to it and going with the story. I do think that the actors are extremely charismatic. And, you know, Chae Woo-shik is a character who's, you know, we still kind of think of him as a young actor, but he's been in a number of films and he has real charisma, I think. And then Cho Jung-un brings his.
Yeah, he's so tall. He's incredibly large.
That's what you take away from the film.
No, the thing is, I've been lucky to meet him actually, and he's a really interesting character. And my first impressions was just like, oh my goodness, you're a giant. And you kind of see that in his film as well. He's quite an intimidating character, but he's also like a big bear as well. But yeah, I thought I had issues with it, but I think, you know, I give it like 3 stars out of 5. Not a terrible film, but certainly has some issues. There's also the issue of product placement at the moment. There's just so much product placement, and you get this with Hollywood films, but in Korean films now, especially cars, it's like
it's quite in your face.
Yeah,
as well.
Hard Hit was that the film last year, which was pretty much a car advert, and kind of not to the same extent here, but yes, certainly see more of that these days.
Okay, so 2 lukewarm reviews to start the year. Well, that does it for our first movie spotlight of the year. Gentlemen, it's great to have you back, and we'll see you again next time.
Yeah, have a great weekend.
Take care.
It's time now for our Friday closing segment, Next Week from Seoul, where we take a look at what's coming up in the week ahead. And rounding up those events for us is our staff editor, Mark Wilson-Chair, who's joined us now in the studio. Mark, hello. It's good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Okay, so what do we need to look out for next week, Mark?
Right. Antiviral COVID-19 pills will make landfall next week, with the first shipment expected to arrive around Thursday. Mm. The government plans to announce its plan of their use and distribution in detail next week as well. And while we're still in major COVID-19 related news, the COVID-19 vaccination pass system will be in full effect next week after its 1-week grace period expires on Sunday. Those who wish to enter multipurpose or high-risk facilities will have to present proof of vaccination or a negative PCR test issued within 48 hours, and a violation of this system would lead to fines or administrative actions.
Yes, and that's for those 18 and older. While the government plans to adopt the system for those below 18 in March after a 1-month grace period as well. Okay, Mark, moving on. What else is set to happen next week?
KoRail's train tickets for Seoul now, or Lunar New Year, will go on sale from next Tuesday to Thursday. This applies to tickets for KTX, ITX Seimaul, and Mugunghwa trains running from January 28th to February 2nd. Those with disabilities as well as senior citizens will be able to book their tickets first on Tuesday and will be able to make reservations online as well as over the phone. Others can make their reservations on Wednesday and Thursday, but only online. And as it is another Seoul now during the COVID-19 pandemic, Only window seats will be made available to fight the spread of infections. Holiday tickets for the Super Rapid Train, or SRT, will go on sale the following week.
Right, so for those looking to travel during the Lunar New Year holiday, they need to get ready next week to book those tickets. Okay, time for just one more. What have you got for us?
The four figure skaters to represent Team Korea at the upcoming Beijing Winter Olympics will be determined in the final national team trials Sunday. The second round of the two-day Olympic trials will go down in Uijeongbu, Gyeonggi Province from Saturday. And I feel like I'm going into going for gold mode here. I will be talking about the Olympics twice in 2 years, so that is pretty amazing. So South Korea has secured two quota spots in each of the men's and women's singles. The top two skaters in each discipline, based on combined points of the two rounds of the trials, remember this is the second rounds, they'll be able to secure their tickets for Beijing next month. Now, I won't get into the points, but on the men's side, 2018 Olympian Cha Jun-hwan, along with Lee Si-hyung, are well ahead of the pack for the first round, well ahead of the pack in points. Mm. And on the women's side, Yoo Young and Kim Ye-rim lead the pack in points, also well ahead. With the next three skaters, they're just too young to be eligible for the games. So anything can happen on Saturday and Sunday, but it seems like those four are really on the way to the games.
Sure, and we'll see who will make it to Beijing, which is less than a month away now. Okay, that does it for next week from Seoul. Mark, thank you for that roundup, and we'll see you next week.
See you then.
And we wrap up our show there. Thank you for staying with us. Join us again on Monday for the latest updates and analysis from Korea. Till then, we hope you have a wonderful weekend. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and thank you as always for listening. Goodbye. Thank you.